Hi, and welcome back to A Twist of Fate. This week's episode, we are talking about Fred and Rose West. Frederick West was born on September 9th, 1941, at Bickerton College in Muchmarkle, Herefordshire. He was Walter and Daisy's first child that had survived childbirth. The family were poor farm workers, yet were close and protective of each other. His father was the one to discipline the kids, while Daisy was a doting and overprotective mother. When Fred was only 5 years old, the family moved to Moorcourt Farm, where his father had started working as a milking herdsman and a harvest hand. Their new cottage had absolutely no electricity and was only heated by a fireplace. By 1951, Daisy had given birth to 8 children. However, only 6 survived childbirth. Even with all these kids, Daisy still favored Fred more than the others, and he would often get teased for being a mama's boy and really relied on his other siblings for friends. In the house, each child had their own chores to do. The 3 girls would go pick hops and strawberries, while the 3 boys harvested wheat and hunted rabbits. Fred had quit school when he was only 15 years old to go and work at Moorcourt Farm. He had claimed that when he was only 12 years old, his mother, Daisy, had introduced him to sex. In his early teens, Fred often engaged in sexual activities with the animals on the farm and believed that incest was completely normal because of the relationships between his dad and his sisters. However, Doug, Fred's youngest brother, said that these claims were only a part of Fred's imagination. By 1957, Fred and another one of his brothers, John, would socialize at a youth club in Ledbury, where his accent had gotten him the nickname Country Bumpkin. Fred was very aggressive towards women, as he only saw them as objects of his own pleasure and would often sexually harass many of the teen girls at the youth club. When his advances were accepted, which was very rare, the girl would usually find that Fred only cared about his own enjoyment. For his 17th birthday, he had bought himself a motorcycle, which he crashed 2 months later, causing him to suffer from a fractured skull, broken arm, and a broken leg. Fred was in a coma for a week and needed braces to walk for a few months. He ended up with a major fear of hospitals and would go into rage fits. 2 years after this accident, Fred was back in the hospital after he had groped a girl on a fire escape outside of the youth club. The girl had ended up punching him, which caused him to fall down 2 flights of stairs. In June of 1961, Kitty, Fred's 13-year-old sister, had revealed to their mother that he had been raping her since December the year before, and that she had unfortunately gotten pregnant. When he was arrested that same month, he openly admitted that he has been doing the same thing to other girls since his early teens, and then proceeded to ask, "Doesn't everybody do it?" Fred was tried on November 9th at Herefordshire Assizes. And even though his mother was disgusted by what he had done, she testified in his defense. The case eventually collapsed when Kitty refused to testify. Fred was then disowned and his mother had kicked him out, making him move in with his Aunt Violet. However, they reunited the next year. Fred started seeing Catherine Costello in September of 1962 when he was 21 years old. They had first met 2 years earlier at a Muchmarkle dance, and they dated for a few months before Catherine had to go back to Scotland. By the time her and Fred had gotten married, she had gotten pregnant by an Asian bus driver, which caused her to move from Glasgow to England because some of her family members were openly against her having a mixed child. Catherine and Fred had gotten married on November 17th in Ledbury. The only guest was Fred's brother John. At first, they were living with Fred's aunt until they decided to move to Coatbridge, where Fred had found a job driving an ice cream truck. Catherine had given birth to her daughter Charmaine in March of 1963. They had come up with a story that Catherine had miscarried their child and that they decided to adopt Charmaine. The year after Charmaine was born, Catherine had given birth to Fred's daughter Anna Marie while they were living in Glasgow. Their nanny, Isa McNeil, and some of their neighbors had said that even though Catherine was a mindful mother, she also struggled to raise the 2 kids, and that Fred was also very cruel to them. He would keep the girls basically caged to the bottom of their bunk bed, using bars that had been fitted to fit into the spaces between the bunks. The girls were only allowed to be out of their makeshift cages when he was at work. Later on in his life, Fred admitted to having countless affairs in the early ages of their marriage, and even had a kid with one of those women. When Catherine found out about his affairs, she started to have an affair with a man named John McLachlan. Fred had caught the couple one time, which led him to punch his wife, causing John to punch him in her defense. The two men had gotten into a fight after that. Fred had gone as far as pulling a knife and trying to stab the man in the stomach. However, after he was punched for the second time, Fred stopped fighting. When John was asked about this encounter years later, he had said, he couldn't tackle a man, but wasn't so slow to attacking a woman. John and Catherine continued to see each other, and whenever John would see her with a new bruise or a black eye, he knew Fred was beating her, and in return would go and beat Fred. Once John had witnessed Fred smack Charmaine, who was barely a toddler at the time, across the face for asking if she could have a simple ice cream cone from his van, which then resulted in another beating from John. By early 1966, Fred had started to become more dominant and controlling over the three women living in their household. Catherine, their nanny Issa, and Anne McFall, who had started living with them after her boyfriend had unfortunately died in a workplace accident. Catherine and Issa took the brunt of his violent mood swings. He had also gone after Charmaine more than once. Fred had escalated to encouraging Catherine to do sex work in order to make up for the money that he wasn't bringing in with his ice cream truck job. Trying to escape the violent household, Catherine called John, begging him to rescue her, the kids, and Issa. John, Catherine, and Issa started to plan an escape. John and Issa's boyfriend, John Trotter, would secretly drive out to Bishop's Cleeve in John's car and would cautiously take the four back to Scotland. Anne had become more and more in love with Fred, who had promised to marry her. It is very likely that she is the one who told Fred about the women having an escape plan, because on the night that the plan was supposed to carry out, Fred showed up, and Anne was the only one who was suspiciously calm and collected. She had also told Issa that she had planned to stay all along and was going to take care of the two kids. A fight broke out between John and Fred. Fred had been hit several times while he was clutching at his daughters. After the police were called, everyone left, but not before Fred threatened to kill Catherine if he ever saw her again. Catherine would frequently visit her daughters in England when they lived with Fred, which led her to feel bitter towards Anne because of her being another mother figure in her daughter's lives. On October 11th, Catherine, as an act of hostility towards Anne and Fred, stole some of their things and headed back to Glasgow. She was arrested a month later and had been transferred back to Gloucester for her trial, where she was sentenced to 3 years of probation. During her trial, Fred had lied while testifying by stating that him and Anne were living together, but Anne was going back to Scotland soon. After Catherine's trial, Anne had moved into a caravan at the Timberland Caravan Park, while Catherine continued to switch between living in England with Fred and living in Glasgow. In letters that Anne would write to Issa and her family, she had said that she believed that a relationship with Fred would offer her a better life than she would have in Scotland with them, and even confessed to trying to get Fred to divorce Catherine and marry her instead. The 18-year-old and 8 months pregnant Anne. Anne had gone missing in July of 1967. Her disappearance was never reported, however, her dismembered body was found in 1994 at the edge of a cornfield between Muchmarkle and Kempley. Someone had carefully removed the 18-year-old's limbs, many of her fingers had been cut off, and were likely kept as a trophy. Her unborn baby appeared to be unfortunately cut out of her womb. Fred denied having anything to do with Anne's death at first. However, he confessed to one visitor that he had stabbed her to death one night after they had an argument. This story didn't match up with the rope cord that had been tied around her wrists, which suggested that she was restrained before she was brutally murdered. The month after Anne's body was found, Catherine had moved back in with Fred, and the little family moved to the Lake House Caravan Park. At first, their relationship had started to get better. However, only after a year, Catherine left again. With no help to take care of the girls when he had to work, Fred would temporarily place them with social services. In 1969, Fred first met Rosemary Letts, which right after her 15th birthday at a bus station. Rose first thought that Fred was foul with his disheveled appearance, but that quickly changed when he poured his attention into her over the couple of days that he sat next to her at the bus stop. She denied going on a date with the man twice, however, decided that she would let him accompany her home. Rose never had an actual boyfriend, but she was pretty sexually active. He tried to relate to a certain point, telling her that his wife abandoned him with his two daughters, even though he wanted to have more kids. Rose's parents obviously weren't very thrilled that their 15-year-old daughter was dating a much older man and forbid her from seeing him. When she had continued to see Fred, they went to social services and explained to them that their 15-year-old daughter had been seeing this older man and that there had been rumors that she was prostituting herself out of his caravan. As a result, Rose was placed in a home for troubled girls in August of 1969 and was only allowed to leave under strict and controlled conditions. When she was allowed to leave to go visit her parents, Rose would almost always use that time to go see Fred. On her 16th birthday, she left the home for troubled girls and had gone to her parents' house, since Fred was serving a 30-day sentence for theft and unpaid fines. However, after he was released, she moved in with him while he went and got his daughters from social services. Bill, Rose's dad, as one last attempt to get her away from Fred, took her to see a police surgeon in February 1970, and it was confirmed that Rose was pregnant. As a result of this, Rose was once again placed in a home and was released a month later after everyone came to the conclusion that Rose would terminate her pregnancy and would live with her parents. In great teenage fashion, Rose obviously went to live with Fred instead, which led to her father disowning her and forbidding her from ever stepping foot in their house again. After 3 months, Fred and Rose moved to a two-story house in Gloucester. Rose had given birth on October 17th that year, naming her daughter Heather Ann. There had actually been rumors that Rose had been impregnated by her father and that he was actually the father of Heather Ann. 2 months after his daughter was born, Fred was arrested for stealing car tires and was released 6 months later. While Fred was serving his time, his daughters were left for Rose to look after. Charmaine and Anna Marie were also told to refer to Rose as their mother. The girls have said that while Rose would take care of them, they would be criticized all the time, beaten, and put through other forms of punishment. Charmaine was usually the one to push Rose's buttons when she would refuse to cry or show any signs of being in pain when she was being beaten. Rose failed to break Charmaine's spirit. The girl would always talk to her sister about the day Catherine would save them. Anna Marie remembered later on a time that Charmaine really got under Rose's skin was when Rose had just yelled at her and she said, My real mommy wouldn't swear or shout at us. Tracy Giles, a childhood friend of Charmaine's, remembered one time she had walked into the house unannounced and had seen Charmaine standing on a chair naked, gagged with her hands tied behind her back with a belt, as Rose stood next to her with a large wooden spoon in her hand. According to Tracy, both girls had blank expressions, not giving Rose the satisfaction of showing her they were hurting. Charmaine's hospital records show that she had previously been treated for a severe puncture wound to her left ankle, which Rose explained was just a household accident. It is believed that Rose had killed Charmaine just before Fred was released from prison. She had taken the girls to see Fred on June 15th, and either on that day or shortly after, Charmaine was killed. A forensic odontology confirmed that she was killed while Fred was still in prison. Tracy's mother, Shirley, also confirmed that her daughter's best friend was killed before Fred was released. Rose would explain her death to people by telling them that Catherine had called and wanted Charmaine to live with her in Bristol and told the school that she had gone to live with her mother in London. When Fred was eventually released from prison on June 24th, he told Anna Marie that his sister went to live with their mother in Scotland. In her autobiography, Out of the Shadows, she thought back to when she asked why Catherine only picked up Charmaine and not her, and her father replied, She wouldn't want you, love. You're the wrong color. Rose had hidden Charmaine's body in a coal cellar on Midland Road until Fred had gotten out of prison. Fred later buried her in their backyard and remained adamant that he didn't dismember her. When the autopsy of Charmaine was done, it showed that her hip bone had been severed, but that could have been from renovations that Fred had done. It also showed that her finger, wrist, toe, and ankle bones were missing, which spread the rumor that they were also kept as trophies. Throughout the years, Catherine was in and out of her kids' lives. She had gone to Moorcourt Cottage to ask about where her daughter was and how they were doing in August of 1971. Kristen, Catherine's sister, had said how she was depressed and extremely anxious about her daughter's living situation. Catherine had gotten Fred and Rose's new address and had gone to confront them with how they've been treating her daughters. This was the last time she was seen alive. Her body was found with a short metal tube sticking out of her body that had suggested that she had been sexually assaulted before she was killed. She had been dismembered, packed into plastic bags, and buried by a cluster of trees about a mile from Much Markle. Fred and Rose had officially gotten married on January 29, 1972, at the Gloucester Register Office, where Fred had incorrectly put himself down as a bachelor on their marriage certificate. Several months later, while Rose was pregnant with their second child, the family moved into a three-story home that they rented from the council, which Fred later bought. Rose gave birth to another daughter on June 1st that year, naming her May June. After giving birth, Rose started to work as a sex worker and had worked out of the upstairs bedroom in their house and would advertise out of a Contact magazine. Rose also started to have casual sex with the men and women that would stay with them and people Fred would meet at work. She would go on to brag that no one could completely satisfy her. When she would engage in these activities with women, she gradually became more and more brutal. And if the other woman showed she was in pain or that she was scared, Rose would ask, "Aren't you woman enough to take it?" The room was known throughout their house as Rose's room and had several people so that Fred could watch, and later installed a baby monitor so he could listen if he needed to be somewhere else in the house. Her room had its own private bar and a warning sign that would be turned on when Rose had a client with her. She even carried the key around her neck, and a separate doorbell was set in place for clients when they visited. They earned most of their money this way. Rose's father had eventually grown to like Fred, and the pair had opened a cafe together that they named the Green Lantern, which had quickly went bankrupt. When her father found out what Rose had been doing, he even went and became one of her clients. Rose had given birth to 8 kids by 1983, with at least 3 being from different clients. Fred had accepted all of them as his own and had told them the reason why they were all different skin tones was that their great-grandmother was a black woman. When each of his kids turned 7 years old, they were assigned chores, which were rarely allowed outside and needed to follow strict rules that if broken were met with severe punishments. Most of these punishments were carried out by Rose and occasionally from Fred. They were always careful to not leave a mark on them, however. Between 1972 and 1992, the West kids had been admitted to the hospital a total of 31 times. All were explained to be accidents and were never reported to social services. One night, in August of 1974, Rose had chased after Fred with a carving knife. He had gotten away by running into a room and slamming the door, which caused the knife to get stuck, and Rose's hand slid down the blade, causing 3 of her fingers to almost be severed. In September of 1972, Anna Marie's personal hell began. Her father and Rose led her to a cellar at 25 Cromwell Street and ordered the 8-year-old to take off her dress. However, when she hesitated, Rose ripped the dress off of her. Anna Marie was stripped, tied to a mattress, and gagged before her father raped her, while Rose watched and encouraged him. Afterwards, Rose laughed while she watched Anna Marie struggle to walk. Rose had said to the 8-year-old, "I'm sorry. Everybody does it to every girl. It's a father's job. Don't worry and don't say anything to anybody." She made it clear that the sexual abuse wouldn't stop, and they threatened that if she ever told anybody that she would get beaten. Occasionally, the abuse would be carried out by Rose. When Anna Marie turned 13, she was forced by her parents to prostitute herself, also working in the house. Anyone who asked how old she was were told that she was 16. A month later, 17-year-old Caroline Owens had been hired by the Wests as the kid's nanny. They had found her one night hitchhiking home from visiting her boyfriend. Once Caroline had told them that she didn't like her stepfather and was looking for a job, they offered her a part-time job if she would be a live-in nanny to their three kids, and she would be brought home every Tuesday. Several days after this agreement, Caroline moved into the home and shared a room with Anna Marie, who she described as very withdrawn. When Caroline asked about the stream of clients that would wander out into the house, Rose told her that she was a masseuse. The 17-year-old had also remembered that Fred had told her that he was skilled in terminating pregnancies if she ever needed one. According to Caroline, Fred would constantly talk about sex and would tell her about how many women he would perform abortions on, that they would be so happy that they would offer themselves to him as a reward. Once she became a target of Fred's sexual attention, she had decided to move out of the West's house and back home. Rose and Fred knew that Caroline hitchhiked and that she would often travel between Cinderford and Tewksbury. The two of them decided that they were going to kidnap her for their shared gratification. Later on, Fred admitted that the initial intention was to kidnap, rape, and later possibly murder Caroline. His true intentions, however, were to see if Rose would actually go along with the abduction. The couple only had gotten Caroline into the car by apologizing for what had happened. When she had gotten in the back seat, Rose also slid in the back seat with her, claiming it was for girl talk. Rose started the assault on Caroline when she started fondling her while Fred asked her if she had gone and had sex with her boyfriend that night. When she had started to object to what they were doing, Fred stopped the car and called her a bitch before knocking her out so that they could bound and gag her with a scarf and duct tape. In her statement she had given to the police after the attack, Caroline had told them that when she had gotten to the West's home after the abduction, they gave her a cup of tea that had been laced before once again the couple sexually assaulted her. After she had realized how serious the situation was, she stopped fighting off Rose and Fred. Fred had claimed that he had killed hundreds of girls before. After the assault, Caroline was asked to become their nanny again, and seeing it as her only escape, Caroline took the job. Later that day, Rose took Caroline to a laundromat, where she was able to escape and go back home. At first, she was too humiliated to talk about what happened, and didn't tell her mother what had actually happened to her, until she started to notice the bruises and welts that Rose and Fred had left on her body. Once Caroline told her mother what had happened, she immediately reported it to the police, and Fred and Rose were arrested and charged with assault, indecent assault, actual bodily harm, and rape. When the time came around for the trial, Caroline couldn't bring herself to face them long enough to testify, so all charges that had to do with sexual abuse were dropped. The Wests agreed that they would plead guilty to indecent assault and causing actual bodily harm. They were each fined only £50, and they were even allowed to walk free. When Caroline was given the news that they were in fact free of any serious charges, she had attempted suicide. The West's first known murder was committed 3 months after their trial. They had killed 19-year-old Linda Goh, who had met Fred and Rose through a guy that had been staying with them in 1973. Linda would frequently visit the men that would stay at the West's home. On April 19th, she moved into the home, and the next day, the other tenants were told that Linda was told that she needed to leave because she had hit one of the children. This was the same story that they had told her mother when she called to see where Linda was. When her body was eventually found, it was found dismembered. Her jaw had been completely wrapped in adhesive and surgical tape in order to silence her screams, and two small tubes were likely inserted in her nose so that she could breathe through the tape. Two long pieces of string had also been found with her body. It is likely that Linda had been suspended from holes that had been carved into the wooden support beams on the ceilings of the cellar. Fred had later admitted that he drilled the holes for the purpose of suspending his victims, that would later die from either strangulation or suffocation. There were 5 cervical vertebrae, the patella, and numerous finger bones missing from Linda's body that were later found buried in a pit that had been dug under the garage. Later on in the investigation, it was found that 5 victims had been murdered and buried in the cellar between November 1973 and April of 1975. The first of the victims was 15-year-old Carol Ann Cooper. He was abducted on November 10th, 1973. She lived in the Pines Children Home in the Worcester and had been taken after she had been spending time with her boyfriend that night while she was waiting for the bus. She had died the same way Linda had, by suffocation. They had dug a small grave in the cellar before she was dismembered and buried in it. After the murder of 18-year-old Juanita Mott in April 1975, Fred went over the cellar floor with concrete, which he later converted the space into a bedroom for one of his older kids. It is unknown if they committed any murders until May 1978, when Shirley Robinson, another 18-year-old who had been living with them at the time, she had met them the year before at the Green Lantern Cafe. Unfortunately, Shirley had been pregnant when she was murdered. At first, Rose bragged about the fact that Shirley was pregnant with Fred's kid. However, it is possible that she started to hate her and that was her motive for killing her. Shirley's body was greatly dismembered. However, since there had been no evidence that she was restrained, it pointed out a more sexual motive for her murder. Shirley's unborn baby had been removed from her body and was also missing several bones. They told people the same story with the other victims. Fred would tell people that she moved back to live with her father in West Germany. The final murder that the West had committed was on August 5th, 1979, and committed with a pretty distinct sexual motive. They had murdered 16-year-old Allison Chambers, who had run away from a local children's home and had started working as their nanny in the middle of 1979. She had only lived with them for a few weeks before she was killed, and her family was sent a letter written by her with some reason as to why she wouldn't be in contact. By then, Fred had turned his sexual attention towards his daughters, Heather and May, after Anna Marie had run away. The frequency of the sexual abuse increased once they had hit puberty. He wasn't at all apologetic about this abuse and had been caught saying, "I made you, I can do what I like with you." He had made it aware that his intention was to impregnate both Heather and May. At one point, he had been forcing his children to watch porn with him. Since Heather, May, and their younger brother Stephen were pretty close in age, they had made a pact that none of the girls would be allowed alone with Fred unless there was another person with them. They had dug a small grave in the cellar before she was dismembered and buried in the shallow grave. After the murder of 18-year-old Juanita Mott in April 1975, Fred went over the cellar floor with concrete, which he later converted the space into a bedroom for one of his older kids. It is unknown if they committed any murders until May of 1978. When Shirley Robinson, another 18-year-old who had been living with them at the time, went missing. She had met the couple the year before at the Green Lantern Cafe. Unfortunately, Shirley had been pregnant when she was murdered. At first, Rose bragged about the fact that Shirley was pregnant with Fred's child. However, it is possible that that is the reason why she started to hate her, and that that was her motive for killing her. Shirley's body was greatly dismembered. However, since there had been no evidence that she had been restrained, it pointed out a more sexual motive for her murder. Shirley's unborn baby had been removed from her body and was also missing several bones. They told people the same story with the other victims. Fred would tell people that she had moved back to West Germany to live with her father. The final murder the West committed was on August 5th, 1979, and was committed with a pretty distinct sexual motive. They had murdered 16-year-old Allison Chambers, who had run away from a local children's home and had started working as their nanny in the middle of 1979. She had only lived with them for a few weeks before she was killed, and her family was sent a letter written by her with some reason as to why she wouldn't be in contact. By then, Fred had turned his sexual attention towards his daughters, Heather and May, after Anna Marie had run away in 1979. The frequency of the sexual abuse increased once they had hit puberty. He wasn't at all apologetic about this abuse, and had been caught saying, "I made you, I can do what I like with you." He had made it aware that his intention was to impregnate both of his daughters. At one point, he had been forcing his children to watch porn with him. Since Heather, May, and their younger brother, Stephen, were all pretty close in age, they had made a pact that none of the girls would be alone with Fred unless with another person out of the three of them was there to prevent them from getting raped again. The girls had developed a routine of only showering or changing when Fred was out of the house or if one of them stood in front of the door. Fred had also told Stephen that by the time he turned 17, he would have to have sex with Rose. However, he had fortunately been kicked out when he turned 16. Even though they were sickened by their father's actions, May had developed a coping mechanism of whenever she had been touched by their father, she would jokingly push it to the side. In her biography, she wrote that she knew that Heather had taken the abuse worse than she did and was stronger affected by it. Because of the way that Heather would react to the abuse, Rose and Fred had suspicions that she was a lesbian, which only made the taunting worse. By then, she had talked to May and Stephen about running away and living a nomadic lifestyle in the forest of Dean, and that she never wanted to see another human again. Heather did mention the abuse to a few friends, and they took note of the external signs they could see. Several staff members at the secondary school Heather and her siblings had gone to also took note of the dramatic change in Heather. Heather had always been a good student. However, the staff were very concerned when she started to refuse to change her clothes or shower after gym class. On one occasion, she had been forced to take a shower by the teacher, who noticed the bruises and welts on the child's body. She would tell them that those were from getting into fights with her siblings. However, she did tell one of her friends that they were caused by her parents. She even included the business that Rose ran from the house. By the mid-1980s, the rumors of Rose's sex life had spread to several of the children's classmates, and the children were then told that they could never tell anyone of what was happening. However, Heather had already confirmed the rumors to a few friends. The father of one of their classmates, who was also a friend of Fred's, had heard about the rumors and had gone to Fred with his concerns, and from then on, he would take Heather to and from school. She started to apply to multiple jobs after she dropped out of school in 1987. By June the next year, she was hoping to get a job as a chalet cleaner at a holiday camp. However, when she was told she didn't get the job on June 18th, she had cried through the night. The next morning, her siblings noticed that she was back to her anxious self as they left for school. When her siblings had come home after school, they were told that Heather had gone to accept the job that she didn't get. However, Rose had told a curious neighbor that her and the girl had gotten into a fight and she had run away from home. When her siblings started to ask questions, Fred changed the story by telling them that Heather had actually run away to marry a girl. However, when May and Stephen suggested calling the police and reporting her missing, the story was changed again to Heather was involved in credit card fraud and that it wouldn't be the best idea to involve the police. Fred and Rose had gone as far as asking a friend to fake a phone call from Heather. In the next few years, Fred had started to threaten the kids that they would end up under the patio like Heather. when they wouldn't listen or if they told anyone about the abuse. Fred had built a barbecue pit across from where Heather was buried and even placed a picnic table on her grave. With Heather's disappearance and Fred and Rose constantly changing the story, plus the rumors of Rose's sex life and the abuse, police were eventually informed about the concerns. In February 1994, a search warrant was issued to excavate the garden. When his daughter Louise turned 13, Fred had asked her to take some bottles to a room upstairs, and not long after, her siblings heard her scream, "No, don't." After Fred had left the room, her siblings had found her squirming in pain, crying that Fred had just raped and sodomized her and had even tried to strangle her. Several weeks later, Louise told friends that what was happening to her, and her friend told her mom, who went and anonymously informed the police. Police served the Wests with a search warrant on the pretext of searching for stolen property on August 6, 1992. 99 homemade pornographic movies were found, however, not the one Fred made of Louise. Louise had given her full statement through a specially trained solicitor, telling them how the sexual abuse started when she was 11 years old and that her mother made no efforts to stop him. The next day, all the kids were placed in foster care. The medical examinations revealed evidence of both physical and sexual abuse. The kids had told officers that they were told they couldn't mention the abuse or they would end up under the patio like their sister Heather. That was the breaking point of the case. Detectives started a full investigation which led to Fred being arrested and charged with 3 counts of rape and one count of sodomy, with Rose as an accomplice. Rose had been charged with child cruelty, inciting her husband to have sex with her daughter, and obstructing police. When they were questioned about the disappearance of their daughter, Fred and Rose had said that Heather was alive and well, and that she had been supporting herself by prostituting. At first, Rose said that she had no idea where Heather was or the reason why she left home. However, on August 11th, she told an officer that she magically remembered that she had convinced Heather that she should move out because she didn't want Heather's alleged homosexuality around her younger kids. Rose also told police officers that she had given her £600 as an incentive for her to move out, adding that she also had occasionally heard from Heather throughout the years. Rose was granted bail the next day on the condition that she couldn't contact her family before the trial. While Fred waited for his trial, he was being held in Birmingham on remand. After Anna Marie found out that her father was denying that he did anything wrong, she called and offered her full statement of what she went through as a child. In her statement she gave to Detective Constable Hazel Savage, she told them about the vast amount of physical, mental, and sexual abuse that Fred and Rose put her through before she agreed to testify against both of them. When Anna Marie's husband was brought in to talk to police, he revealed that Heather confided in him exactly how unhappy she was and her desire to move just before she disappeared. Heather didn't tell him about the sexual abuse, but Davis did confess that he had been concerned about her welfare, and he even told Heather that he would talk to her parents. However, she had shut the idea down quickly, stating that they would kill both of them if they did anything. Social services and police spoke with May, who, after talking to Louise, who didn't want Fred to be charged, had at first denied any sexual abuse claims. Detectives then started to focus on finding Heather in order to corroborate Anna Marie's statement. However, the Inland Revenue and the Social Security Department held no records that she was alive. 2 months later, the Gloucester Social Services contacted police to express their concerns on the disappearance of Heather. On June 7, 1993, the case collapsed when Anna Marie and Louise decided not to testify. Louise had expressed that she just wanted to go back to her family, and Anna Marie withdrew her statement because of how it was affecting her younger siblings and because of how vindictive Rose actually was. Shortly after withdrawing her statement, Anna Marie had gone back to talk to Detective Savage about how her mother, Catherine, and Charmaine, her half-sister, had also gone missing. Even after Fred and Rose were acquitted of their charges, their kids still remained in foster care and were only granted to visit their parents supervised. Almost all of Fred and Rose's family had disowned them by 1993. However, to the few that hadn't cut ties, were told that the police had fabricated the charges. When Anna Marie was asked about the joke that Heather had been buried under the patio, she said that the only time she had heard Fred say it, he had started laughing right after, so she blew it off as a joke. While going through Fred's past, investigators discovered that Catherine and her daughter Charmaine disappeared in 1971, and no missing person report had been filed for either of them. Detective Constable Savage and her team were rightfully convinced that Heather was dead and that the family joke might actually be true. The Gloucester police successfully obtained a warrant to search the West property on February 23, 1994, and the next day, Rose was served with that search warrant. When she had become frantic and yelled to Stephen to go get his dad. During the informal questioning, Rose started to mix up her stories and started to yell and fight the officers. Fred was at work when Stephen called about the search warrant, which he told him he would be there immediately. However, he didn't get there till 3 hours later, telling his family about how he intended to get a voluntary witness statement to the police regarding where Heather has been. When police didn't believe what Fred was saying, that his daughter was alive and well, however was involved with drug cartels, he changed his strategy to claiming that the officers had a grudge against him because he was acquitted of his past charges. That night, after the search team had left for the night, May and Stephen overheard Fred and Rose whispering in the kitchen while looking at the garden. While Stephen was getting ready for work the next morning, Fred had said to him, "Look, son, look after Mom and sell the house. I've done something really bad. I want you to go to the paper and make as much money as you can." It wasn't long after that when police showed up to continue the search, and that's when Fred confessed Heather's murder and that he wanted to be taken to Bearland Police to provide his full statement. Fred formally confessed at 11:15 that morning to killing Heather. He had told the officer that he had strangled her to death in a fit of rage and then dismembered her body in the ground floor bathroom, then stored her remains in a trash can while he waited to dig her grave. While giving his statement, Fred was very adamant that Rose didn't have anything to do with it and that she had been with a client when he had murdered Heather. He also added that they hadn't found his daughter's body because they were digging in the wrong part of the garden, and then volunteered to show them where to look. After hearing about the confession, the family's appointed social worker told May and Stephen that their father did kill their sister. Stephen collapsed against the wall to start crying while May still slipped into shock, whispering to herself that he didn't do it. The next day, Fred showed officers where to find his daughter's body. Sometime after 4, police found a human thigh bone sticking out of a section of the garden that Fred said that they shouldn't look in. In the section that Fred pointed out, they found remains stuffed into trash bags and tied with 2 lengths of rope. The remains were taken back to the station where they were determined to be female remains and 1 kneecap and several fingers were missing. Her nails had been found in a pile which suggested they were torn off as a form of torture. A few hours later, the dental records unfortunately confirmed that those remains were Heather. That night, after he had formally been charged with his daughter's murder, he asked why a 3rd thigh bone was found. To which kind of forced Fred to confess that there were 2 other sets of remains. They were, according to Fred, Shirley Robinson, who used to live with them and had been pregnant with his child when he had killed her in 1978, and the 2nd set of remains Fred had incorrectly guessed as her lover. However, he couldn't remember her name. After the 3 sets of remains were found, a plan was put into place to search the whole West property. During this time, Rose was placed in a safe house in a nearby town. When Fred was told about the plan, he had authorized his lawyer to deliver a note that he had written to the lead investigator of the case, which happened to be Superintendent John Bennett. The note read, I, Frederick West, authorize my solicitor, Howard Ogden, to advise Superintendent Bennett that I wish to admit a further approximately 9 killings. Expressly Charmaine, Rena, or Catherine, Linda Goh, and others to be identified. F. West. When he was questioned about these claims, he had calmly told the officers that there were 5 more sets of remains buried in the cellar, and a 6th had been buried under the ground floor bathroom. Fred had claimed that they were all either hitchhikers or girls that he would pick up from the bus stops and killed in the 70s. He had said that he killed them because they had threatened to tell Rose about him cheating, and that he would bring them back to the house to assault, dismember, and then bury in shallow graves. He added that the dismemberment had made it easier for him to bury the bodies. Between March 5th and the 8th, investigators found 6 more bodies of young women. Each had been heavily mutilated, and each had evidence of having been put through extreme sexual abuse before they were killed. On the 3rd set of remains, for example, the set of remains had been found in one of the cellar graves, with a piece of cloth wrapped around her skull, and her wrists and ankles had been tied with a rope. A serrated knife was also found in her grave. The 2nd set of remains that had been found with a section of tubing that had been twisted into a U-shape by her dismembered limbs. The remains were found with the skull wrapped in tape 11 to 12 times and had narrow plastic tubing in the nose to allow the victim to breathe before they died. Each set of remains that had been found were all missing numerous bones, mostly fingers. When they had tried to ask Fred about this, Fred had refused to tell anyone where the bones were or what his reason was for taking them. Even though Fred had insisted throughout this whole time that Rose had nothing to do with it, investigators were rightly suspicious and had arrested Rose on April 20th, 1994. She had initially been charged with offenses that reacted to the rape of an 11-year-old girl and the physical assault of a little boy. Both charges had been from the mid-70s. Rose had been refused bail the next day and was transferred to Puckle Church Prison and was held in maximum security wing. She was able to be questioned more privately there, being questioned about the murders of Heather and Linda Goh, and on April 25th, Rose was charged with Linda's murder. By May 6th, the Wests were charged with 5 counts of murder. On top of the murders committed inside his home, Fred had also confessed to killing his first wife and stepdaughter, and that he knew where Ann McFall's remains were, however denied killing her. After Fred gave them the location, Ann's body was recovered between April 10th and June 7th. Fred was then moved to HM Prison, Birmingham, and was placed on strict suicide watch that called for him to be checked on every 15 minutes. They were brought before the magistrate's court in Gloucester on June 30th, 1994. Fred had been charged with 12 counts of murder, and Rose had been charged with 9 total. This time in court was the very first time the pair had seen each other since Fred had been arrested in February. Before hearing the charges, Fred had leaned over to Rose and placed a hand on her shoulder, to which Rose winced in discomfort. They were both held on remand. As officers were trying to take Fred back to his cell, he resisted, trying to get to Rose, who was desperate to get away from him. Immediately after his appearance in court, Fred was rearrested on suspicion of killing Ann McFall. He was formally charged with her murder on July 3rd and had appeared in court the next morning. While Fred was held on remand in prison the following months after his arrest, he became more and more depressed because of Rose's rejection. Rose had refused to reply to any of his letters, she physically rejected him in court, and reports had leaked that she had assumed the role of a grieving mother and had declared not only her innocence but her hatred of her husband. When he would beg Stephen and Anna Marie, the only ones that would visit him out of all of his kids, to tell their mother how much he really loved her, however, Rose still ignored his attempts. Fred started to withdraw the earlier confession that he had acted alone and had instead decided to give her most of the blame and had claimed that his first wife had killed Ann McFall. Fred's suicide watch had eventually been reduced, and as predicted, Fred strangled himself to death. At the bottom of the suicide note, there was a drawing of his cell as a gravestone that read, "In loving memory, Fred West, Rose West. Rest in peace, where no shadow falls, in perfect peace he waits for Rose, his wife." At the pretrial proceedings held in February, Rose had pleaded not guilty to 10 charges of murder. After Fred's suicide, his charges were added to Rose. Her counsel had finally accepted Rose's willingness to subject the young girls to sadistic physical and sexual abuse. Rose's trial started on October 3, 1995. The judge had made to admit to the testimony related to the sexual assault that both of them had committed on 3 different occasions and had accepted the prosecution's argument that it had established a pattern of behavior repeated throughout the murders. On the 21st and 22nd of November, the jury returned with a unanimous guilty verdict for all 10 murders. The judge had noted in her crimes as appalling and depraved before sentencing Rose to life in prison without the possibility of parole. At first, she was held at the HMP prison Low Newton before she had been transferred in 2019 to HM Prison Newhall, where she remains still, claiming her innocence. This has been A Twist of Fate, and thank you so much for listening. And as always, if you have any questions or requests, feel free to message me. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.